Hi everyone, welcome to the next talk, CRA integration, how to use open source tools to ensure your company is compliant to this Cyber Resilience Act. Welcome to Florian Hackel and Annika Niemann.
And thank you and welcome from our side. We are very happy that we are allowed to speak here today at FOSDEM. First of all, I'd like to introduce us. My name is Annika Niemann, my colleague Florian Hackel. We are both lawyers and work at a law firm in Germany. We are something about 25 lawyers there, all specialized in IT law, and the most of us with the focus FOSS compliance, but we also advise on the CRA and on the EI Act and more or less everything which is related to IT law. And today we want to talk about how FOSS compliance measures support CRA obligations.
Okay, we want to start with a short thesis. In general, our aim for this talk was how can FOSS compliance support CRA readiness. And that is also the picture that you can see here in the background. From our point of view, there is an issue or a topic that you can use your already existing FOSS compliance to get ready for the CRA, and that is symbolized by this bridge.
And that's a very interesting thesis, and we thought we would like to offer you a special experience today and give you a short insight in our everyday work. And that's why, for the next 20 minutes, I will be a manager of a company with many questions to my lawyer, which I have to ask regarding the CRA.
Okay, well, let's start. So first of all, let's quickly frame why FOSS compliance suddenly matters so much more than a few years ago.
Okay, so it's not anymore just I don't want to get sued because of some copyright stuff, but it's more now.
Yeah, today legal exposure also comes from security vulnerability, and especially in open source components, because most of all so proprietary code is open source now. We all know that. For example, think about a security system of a big company that gets hacked because of a small vulnerability issue in an open source component. You as the manufacturer are reliable for that. Everyone will sue you and wants your money for that. Therefore, it's really important now.
Okay, so not only copyright issues anymore, but also product liability.
Yeah, even before the CRA, there are already many customers or suppliers, things like that, that have in their contracts indemnification clauses that assume that you as the manufacturer actually knows which FOSS you use and under which licenses you use it.
And you've already mentioned the CRA, so this is the pivot point of all of this, correct?
It is. It goes on top of that. Now with the CRA, you don't only have with the contractual obligations, but also regulation basis where someone, for example, an official entity can get enforced all the obligations. There are fines. It's even a market entry point if you don't fulfill the regulation of the CRA.
So a lot of a company has to oversee here.
Yeah, and that's only about your own stuff. If you have a supply chain with a lot of suppliers in mind, it's getting even, I would not say worse, but more complicated. Because you're not only responsible for your own stuff, but also for everything that comes from your supplier.
So what I fear is this huge amount of regulations, because, I mean, this is not only the CRA, but we have data protection law, we have the EI Act, and to be honest, I do not even know where I can start here.
I think that is the point where most of you and our other clients are struggling, because they all see these imminent threats of different regulations coming closer and closer without any idea what to do. But the good thing about them is they are all on the same basis. All of them try to aim in a similar direction or want same obligations to be fulfilled. Therefore, if you know about the regulations and now how they interact with each other, you can get summaries of obligations and perform them to fulfill different specifications of all the regulations. One example for is the GDPR and CRA both asks for privacy security by default or privacy by default or by design, and both of them can be fulfilled by a good technical execution of your software, creating an SBOM, things like that, and that helps a lot that you don't have this mass of regulations that you can't fulfill.
So I see there's an overlapping, but it's not only this huge amount of regulations, but we also have many, many tools, and if I understood you correctly, we have to classify all of them to be sure that we are compliant.
Yeah, but again, I wouldn't use all your software or treat all your software the same way. I would try to funnel them, as we describe on this picture, and to start with, if you don't have anything in mind yet, start with an easy attempt. It is three-dimensional from our perspective, and I would start with the customer risk, though. Everything that goes to your customer, first level. Every step you can perform, SBOM, evaluation, manually automated, everything you can think about it, do it. On the other hand, second or third level, you have, for example, the in-group stuff, everything that goes to sister company, mother companies, a bit of effort, but not that much, and everything you use internally, I would not say forget it, but yeah, semi-automated process with a bit of documentation should be enough. And if you want to adjust this, would they rather easy level system, then you can include, for example, points like, do I have a supply chain? Though a lot of suppliers, tier 1, 2, to 3, then you have to level up your project because it's much more difficult to get all the necessary information. Or do you have code from one of your own developers with 5 to 10 components that is easy to handle?
Okay, I understand. It's a risk-based approach, so to speak. And I can focus on the high-risk products and spend all the effort on them, and all the others come later.
That's correct. That's the idea behind it. Don't get panic. Try to funnel for the relevant projects. Spend much of your effort, we write here 80%, into them. Document the rest if one of the official departments come to ask you for that, but in the end, yeah, don't treat them like every customer software you have.
Okay, so that already sounds much more manageable for us if we pay attention to the high-risk products at first.
Okay. The next thing is when we talk about risk levels, you have this assembly line.
Yeah, exactly. I see the assembly line here because I need a... I see this assembly line, but what I need beyond this is a guideline. I need to know what I have to do for the single products we produce.
Mm-hmm. That is where you need a policy framework, because the risk level is only the first level on your compliance process. When you have the risks for your product, is it really relevant to evaluate, okay, for which of the risks I do what procedure in the end to fulfill the specifications. With our first example, level 1, 2, 3, level 1, you need the SBOM. You need the cybersecurity team to evaluate vulnerabilities. You need it, if you go a bit aside from the CRA, a legal team, though, me and my colleague, for example, to evaluate, do you have license breaches? What about the interaction of components? So a lot of work, a lot of effort, but everything should be in this policy framework. On the other side, third level, bit of documentation that should be good enough.
So the compliance level must be graduated. Depends on the risk level.
That's right. That should be the result. And when you have this second level of your compliance process, the third step should be for each procedure or step of this compliance or policy framework, you should have concrete rules. Who does what? So it's relevant that each of these steps is pointed to one of the persons in your company. For example, the SBOM should be created by the dev team in the CI/CD pipeline. The vulnerability check done by your security team. And the legal point, easy to handle. The legals like us will do the license evaluation.
Okay, so let's think about this perfect world. I'm in line with all the regulation you just mentioned, but I'm a little worried about the following situation. The authorities are knocking at my door and ask for proof that I fulfill all this regulation. So is there some way I need to document or I need to provide information to them?
Mm-hmm. I would say the most legally answer would be document everything. So if you can, from the first step to the S-bomb, to the evaluation, to each decision your legal, your security team performs, document them as good as you can. At best at one system that you have everything ready and available if one of the authorities or third party asks for it. But I know this is a bit of a hard attempt if you don't know what to do, but there are already great templates you can use for that. For example, the Open Chain Security Assurance template or ISO 5203. All of them are, from our point of view, an audit-ready structure for SBOM generation and FOSS processing.
Okay, thank you. I think I get a better understanding. So let me sum up the strategy you just developed. So first of all, I now understood that I do not have to analyze all my products the same way, but I can start with the high-risk products and then focus on the low-risk products later. And you agreed there are many regulations. However, they are overlapping. Means with a single measure, I can cover different rules and different regulations, so that's less effort for me and for our company. And based on this understanding I have now, an idea comes up, because we already have FOSS compliance strategy. And here we use common scan tools like Fossology or the Ort scan, and only for the high-risk products we switch to commercial options when we need this depth analyze. And what I also thought about is we can get in touch with our open source product or project office, the OSPO, because they know the code very well. So they can analyze the code, they can help us to create the S-bomb, and also can support regarding the documentation stuff.
That sounds good.
Okay, great, because now I start to see a picture here. But we haven't spoken about another point yet. This is security. The thing is, even if I know my code, how can I identify vulnerability issues? Mm-hmm.
And that is where our first picture comes into place, because the basis for your FOSS evaluation is your SBOM, the thing you already generated. You already named some good tools, like, for example, Ord, or now I know SIFT is a tool. I heard from a talk earlier that there is a new project, or for me it was just new, which is called SBOMify. So try them out. All of them are good, I think. And this SBOM that you created, it has a bit different, I would say, includings regarding FOSS compliance or CRA. But if you have a standard system, you can take the SBOM for everything and then do a cross-reference. You put it to your legal team on the left side for the FOSS evaluation, at best with automated pre-filter and less human evaluation, and on the other hand you have your security team, which can reference it to, for example, CVE or NVD database to get already known vulnerabilities and then perform their vulnerability check.
So that means we can just use the information we got from our open source compliance process and build the vulnerability check just on it.
Yeah, and that is the point from our perspective and how our clients experience it, how CRA becomes achievable, because it demands from you to evaluate and manage your vulnerabilities, and how could you do that if you don't know what's inside your software?
Yeah, that's the crucial point, what's in our software, but we also receive software from suppliers, and we do not know the software very well. I mean, for our own software, we know what open source components we used, but when we receive code from our suppliers, it's hard to analyze this sometimes, and how can I be sure that they are compliant with all the rules?
Often for suppliers, it's much more difficult because for your own code, as you said, you know everything about it. From suppliers, it can be that you get an entirely black box. You just get some binaries in the end, an executable, you have to work with that. And the first step for your future CRR compliance should be to look into your contracts. And that is the point where the legals come into place, because in the contracts, you can demand from your suppliers that they have to transmit the information relevant for CRA compliance, the documentation you need, and all the stuff you want to get CRR ready. And if everything gets a bit messy and you're sued by a third party, by an official department, then besides this, get the information in advance. You should already have liability clauses and indemnification clauses that you, as the final manufacturer, may it be an open source or a proprietary project, can transmit the costs and things you have to your suppliers, which in the end provided this fault.
Okay, I see. So I need a lawyer with good negotiation skills. But if I understood you correctly, if I get my own code under control, if I get the code of my suppliers under control, or at least have good contractual conditions, then I can just finally press this fancy button you just mentioned and receive all the relevant information I can be asked for.
Yeah, and from our point of view, if you performed all these, you know, not easy steps, that is the point where compliance turns from obligation to an opportunity.
So as a manager, I would say it doesn't really sound like an opportunity, because probably it will cost a lot, money and effort.
But in the future, this effort is not only necessary, but from our perspective, it's a selling point, because all of your customers will in the future ask for CRI readiness and CRI compliance. And if you transmit that with your purchase information, or after they asked, 1 or 2 minutes after the question is asked, that is a selling point you won't miss.
Okay, so from a manager point of view, probably I can say it's a product feature and not only an enemy I have to fight. And at this point, our drama is over, and we switch back to our normal rules. However, it was very helpful to try to switch the perspective to understand the worries and the fears our clients have, and to get a better understanding of them. And what we like to give you and also our clients with are some key takeaways we learned during this process. And I think the main key takeaway is that FOSS compliance is half the battle when it comes to a clean vulnerability management. And that's why we believe the topic FOSS will get more attention during the next years. And I mean, this is very, very good news for the open source community.
Yeah, and that is one point I want to get a bit more in detail, because yesterday we heard a lot of sessions regarding CRA, and the question that were asked were that most of the open source developers fear the CRA as this big beast. They don't know how to handle, which obligation they have to fulfill, and so on. But to be honest, I think that is the wrong mindset. From my point of view, the CRA is an opportunity for each open source developer, because think the other way around. Most of the manufacturers will have obligations to be fulfilled. The only way they can get the information to fulfill that is by asking the open source communities, open source developers, because most of their code is open source. On the other hand, from the CRA, there is no obligation that you have to transmit this information or this information to them. Therefore, before the CRA, there was a bit of a situation from David versus Goliath. You have these big companies, small open source developers, and they didn't care about open source, to be honest. We use it in our practice all the day now, that open source is a nice topic, everyone wants a bit of compliance, but that's it. But now they have the issue, they have to care about open source compliance, and they have to ask you. Therefore, two things are relevant from my point of view. The first thing is they will invest a lot of money, hopefully, in the open source communities to get this CRA readiness. And the second thing is, you're on the trigger now. When you're the open source developer and they need the information from you, demand what you want from them. Okay, I think that is everything we want to say for today, though thanks everyone for hearing aloud and listening to us. And yeah, we have 5 minutes left.
Five minutes
so
left.
If there are any questions, point them out.
Hello. So when you talked about the relation between, let's say, business financing and how open source developers fear the CRA and the amount of work that entails, you are basically opposing big companies to open source developers. But there is also the open source companies, which are not big companies. They are open source communities that want to build an open source software and make business out of it in a way that allows them to live and to produce open source. I'm not sure what you mentioned about how the CRA applies to this situation. How, I mean, in this situation, the cost is to the same community in a way. Would you comment on that, please?
Yeah, the microphone is not the best, but you, if I understand the question correctly, it's about when an open source community becomes the deployer of the software and has to fulfill the specification of the CRA. Is that correct? Okay. I think hopefully, or the bad thing about it is there are not much concrete rules and playbooks from the ENISA, the EU Commission, or the in Germany the BSI, for example. To talk about who is only an open source steward, which is, I would say, the good position, because as an open source steward, most of the obligations are free. There are no fines, there are no point the commissioner or other departments can tackle you. My hope will be in the future that the definition of open source steward and manufacturer regarding such a software will be a bit more defined, and each open source community should try to stick under the open source steward definition, because then they're good to go. Answers the question a little bit? Maybe we can talk afterwards. And
question on exactly the last point that you were just making. Every time that I've looked, the EU hasn't given much clear guidance, essentially saying, sorry?
Yeah, but more closer to the microphone.
Okay, there we go. EU hasn't been particularly clear on whether me maintaining free open source project myself count as a manufacturer or not. Everything that you've just said says, essentially, I'm maintaining a thing, I put it out under an unlicensed, good luck. Where are you hearing that from, so that I can have sleep a bit easier at night? Because I'm worried myself.
You mean that as an open source steward, you don't have that much obligations, or
I don't want to get sued because someone gets hacked because of my weekend project that I released at a hackathon 3 years ago. But right now, I would count as a maintainer of that project.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My issue is I just want to get the question a bit better. So you're afraid of code that you have written years ago, and now you're the maintainer, or understood as still as maintainer of that code, and that someone comes and asks you to fulfill the obligation of the CRA. From my point of view, and as I said, there are not that much regulations, but yesterday there were some speakers from the BSI, for example, the German, and from the EU Commission. And what they all pointed out is that they don't want to sue any open source developers, and that there are no, I would not say obligations, but behind the obligations for open source stewards, which are defined in 2425 CRA. There is no rule set of finding these people, getting from the Commission strict obligations to the open source to fulfill the specifications. Therefore, there are obligations, but they are, I would not call them for free, but it's more of a guideline how open source communities and stewards should support the manufacturers to fulfill their specifications, because, to be honest, without that, they are lost in the end.
So we have one more question from the chat. Thank you. Someone says they've implemented SBOM generation for all of their packages, and they ask if you have tips on checking whether that's sufficient for compliance.
Okay, I don't like that microphone. Can you just show me the... You mean it is different for the compliance checking tools. First of all, if you have an SBOM generated from Cyclone DX, and that is something to be, sorry for that, but I'm the lawyer, not the technician here. I heard earlier today there are already good toolings to translate Cyclone DX into the, I would say, CRR-ready or license-compliant ready SBOMs. For the CRA, there are specifications from the EU Commission and the BSI, for example, for Germany, for license compliance. To be honest, we work with this every day. There are no specifications what is necessary for license compliance. The good thing is if your lawyer can work with the information to evaluate all the relevant licenses, then it's good. And if you fulfill all the specifications of Cyclone DX or SPDX, you're on a good way to work with it. And for the FOSS evaluation, as far as I know, all the open source tools we use, that is ORD, ScanCode, FOSSology, they all provide the SBOMs in Cyclone DX or SPDX, and they all fulfill the specifications that we can work with it. We have to finish. Do we?
Annika, Florian, many thanks for your overview.